Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minnig, host of the podcast Behavioral Health Integration. I cannot tell you how excited I am for starting this podcast and for you listeners being here with me in this journey. And I feel like we're going to really learn a lot from each other, and I'm extremely happy to get started. Now, I feel this podcast is going to be geared more towards individuals debating or contemplating on entering the behavioral health field, as well as the healthcare professionals that are currently in it. Now, throughout my time in the behavioral health field, I've held down many different types of positions. I actually got started being a personal trainer at an adolescent treatment center. And then I got motivated for what I was doing. And then I decided to become a chemical dependency technician at the exact same treatment center. And then after that, I transitioned to be a group home worker. Now, the title was actually mental health counselor, but you weren't a mental health counselor. You were just working for the group home and everything, but a snazzy title anyways. And then I went from there to becoming an arms worker, and then finally to my current position as a licensed alcohol drug counselor. Now, in this podcast, I'm going to be going through my experience in this field through my own personal lens. And again, I promise to be honest with you, the listeners, as much as I can about my own career ups and downs. And I'm not naive. I know we've all had different experiences in this field, but just know this is just my experience and my lens. And I know we just all come from different facilities, experiences, life experiences. So I just really feel like we're going to learn a lot from each other, even though we may have different viewpoints. But I'm still going to give constructive criticism regarding the behavioral health system. And at the same time, though, I'm going to be honest and vulnerable to the listeners about my shortcomings in this field, the mistakes I've made, some of the stigmas I used to have about other healthcare professions and whatnot. And I just feel like we're really going to grow from this experience, and it's going to help us gain a lot of knowledge and some answers on how we can improve the system. You know, because I believe many of the issues we have in this world and this field is just based on just ignorance, ego, and just a huge misunderstanding of each other, like what we do, what we don't do. You know, but if we just, you know, stop and take the time to understand one another and the struggles and issues we're going through, that's going to help us create empathy and a strong connection with one another. You know, it's going to develop healthy relationships. And overall, that's really going to help the overall care of the client and how we give care. Because overall, as professionals, we have to ask ourselves, are we doing the best we can? Or are we content with the type of care we're giving our clients? Is it good, adequate, bad, horrible? Are we satisfied with our salaries? You know, with the amount of money we make? You know, is it worth the, not just the physical, but just the emotional effort we put into this job? Honestly, in my opinion, no. I think we as healthcare professionals are severely underpaid. You know, and we deserve to make a lot more money than we do. You know, so that's going to be one of my issues with DHS that I'm definitely going to get into later on in this podcast. You know, and again, we have to really look at each other and are we okay with how we communicate with other healthcare professionals? How is our coordination of care? Not the best at certain times. I know I've had issues with other healthcare professionals. Not a lot, but I had them. And so again, that's where that, you know, mentality comes from, where you just need to like stop, take a step back and be like, okay, where are they coming from? You know, where are they going through? And in the end, we can make this field a better place to be in, you know, because this really isn't meant just to like help the behavioral health professionals now, but I want it to really help future healthcare and behavioral health professionals. You know, how can we right now pave the way for them to be successful in this field? You know, so just another important thing is just remember that clients are one of the most important parts of this job, and we're here to help, but at the same time, we're here to help each other out. So now I feel like this is a good time in the podcast just to tell you a little bit about myself and how I got started in this field. So roughly a little over a year ago, last May, I graduated with my master's degree, co-occurring, so mental health and addiction from Adler Graduate School. And yeah, that was a great experience. It took me a little bit over 3 years to get my master's degree, but it was ultimately just a great experience, and I learned a lot, and I met a lot of amazing professionals, professors and administration staff and individuals in the writing center. Oh God, they helped me so much, especially during my master's thesis. But anyways, yeah, it was just it. I was honored just to be a part of that program, and yeah, so that took a little bit over 3 years. But now I kind of want to get into though how I originated in this field, or how I again started, because the more I've been in this field and I've been talking to others, this isn't really a job or a field where you're just like, oh God, I really want to get into that field, or I want to be a mental health and addiction therapist, or whatnot as a kid, I feel like most kids like myself, they're like, oh wow, I want to grow up to be an NFL player, NBA player, and so forth. But ultimately, in a spiritual sense, I think it's more like this field chooses you or picks you. And I didn't really have, I guess, the traditional route to enter this field, and I know a lot of us haven't. I guess when I started, I was an undergrad student at University of Wisconsin River Falls. I was going for my exercise science degree, and at the time, I was trying to get my personal training certificate because my brother Mitch, he had a friend in Blaine who owned a gym, and through that gym, they would send personal trainers to this treatment center. So that's mostly where I worked, and I got my start at a adolescent treatment center. And yeah, it was a really fun ex job. I was doing personal training for adolescents in substance abuse treatment center. I'd work a little bit with the boys, and then I'd go to the girls' house, work with them. And overall, it was a great experience. Not just like the working out and the physical exercise and how I saw that really improve their mental health and the rehab process, which was great, but just the relationships I made with the kids was just awesome, and I just have a lot of great memories. And again, I wouldn't trade that experience in the world. And then eventually that got me motivated to become a chemical dependency tech. And then I started working in the facility as a tech for a couple of years, and then that's what originally got me motivated to go to grad school in this field. Because after I got my undergrad, I took a year off of school, and I was actually really debating on, oh, should I go into counseling, or should I just get my master's in exercise science? Well, I chose exercise science, and I eventually went to Concordia St. Paul, and I did the grad program for a little bit, but I think I only took maybe two classes there, and then I just realized, I don't see myself in the exercise science field down the road career-wise, even though it's a great major and a great degree and everything. I just at that time I just wanted to do something else, And so I chose to switch my majors, and then I went into mental health. So then I did a year at Crown College in their online program. And that was actually the first year they did mental health counseling online. And that was just another great experience, just again, learning different type of therapeutic modalities. And it was just all new to me because again, I was just so used to exercise science that it was exciting just to like learn something else for a change, So unfortunately, I did a year there, but I left because at the time, they didn't really have a co-occurring degree, they just had mental health. And they did have an addiction program for undergrad, but I maxed out my undergrad loan. So that's what really motivated me to go to Adler Graduate School because they did have that co-occurring program at the time. So I transferred there. And one of the motivations was, and they really helped me out with this, is that you can, it's, they say it's easier to get jobs at LADC when you graduate school and everything. Again, I don't know how true that is, but I was able to find a job fairly easily. But in the end, it was just, again, another great experience. I really liked Alfred Adler's theoretical approach and everything. Really about encouragement, self-awareness, collaboration as a community. I loved all that stuff from Adler, and again, it was awesome. And so I graduated, and I wasn't a full-on LADC though at the time after I graduated. I was actually known as a ADCT, a temp counselor, which pretty much means is I have all the classes and everything. I did my internship, which is the 880 hours to be an LADC. I just didn't take the exam and pass it yet at that time. And honestly, if I could give any of the listeners advice on passing the LADC exam, I just want to say, yeah, the books are very important. You learn a lot from them. But for me, I got the best type of knowledge just from actually doing the job as a temp. It helped me out so much when it come to just learning about the different types of paperwork, documentation, like discharge summaries, when to do them, the amount of time you get, as well as just communicating with other healthcare professionals, coordination of care, because all that's on the exam. And like I said before, I just learned so much from actually just doing the job. And speaking of jobs, I just would like to take this time to go over my overall work experience just in more detail this time. I won't really get into the personal training, but I'll start talking about my time as a technician at the treatment center I worked at. And overall, my God, the things that techs have to go through, I give them all the love and respect in the world because that literally is one of the most underappreciated jobs that we have in our society. And yeah, techs at an adult treatment center, adolescents, no matter what, it's a difficult job and they definitely deserve to get paid more for what they do, just for the emotional abuse they take. It's truly amazing and they are seriously the lifeblood of any treatment facility. And when I was a tech, the main job was more like redirecting clients on their behavior if they're like breaking the rules. I believe the terms were like observe, redirect, and report. And reporting could be to their primary counselor or the director of the treatment center regarding their behaviors. So there's like, redirections, write-ups, and then the counselor would like write up a behavior contract, hoping to again change their behavior. And so there's redirection, there's like the admin process, where you would check like everything in their backpacks, bags that they bring in for any type of drugs or inappropriate behavior. And then you go through all their clothes in the bags, make sure there's no drugs taped to like the pants, underwear, whatnot. And that documentation gets completed, with the inventory and everything. And they would just join the group. Also, we had to cook meals. I remember that for the clients and everything. That was a scary experience for me when I first started because I was not the best cook in the world. So someone who was not good in the kitchen all of a sudden has to cook for like 15 teenagers. Yeah, pretty scary. But I got over it and I won't say I'm a great cook, but I greatly improved. I'll tell you that much. But yeah, no matter what, it's an extremely tough job, working with adolescents, going through their mental health and addiction issues, along with, their family members and everything. And it's just a tough job, and I don't think it's easy for any type of adolescent treatment center to, just to go through. It's just very difficult. And then from there, I did that job for 2.5 years, and then I became a group home worker slash mental health counselor. And it's very similar, you just would redirect the clients. But at this time, I was working with adults There would be on average, I guess, 4 to 6 adults in a group home. And these clients had disorders like, severe depression, severe anxiety, bipolar, 1 and 2, schizoaffective, schizophrenia, a lot of many different types of disorders. That's why they'd be better known as the SPMI population, severe persistent mental illness. And that was another great experience working with this population, just dealing with issues maybe I'm not used to dealing with adolescents. So I worked with them for roughly 8 months. And again, you'd redirect them, you'd cook for them, you'd have to clean, even though you'd want them to like clean for themselves. It's really funny, or not funny in a sense, but again, you encourage them to participate in active daily life skills, and if they do certain things like that, they would either get like money, points, some sort of incentive to again increase that positive behavior and everything. Doesn't always work, And just this one example of this client, really nice guy and everything. And again, you want them to encourage them to, like, let's say, clean their rooms. Well, every day, it doesn't matter if you like you walk by this client's room and it's messy. Yeah, you can encourage them to like, hey, so and so, do you need help cleaning your room? And they say no, day after day. And if you notice that room get to the point where it's just like a biohazard, like it's not safe for the client, the rules, I guess, of the company or DHS is that it doesn't matter if they say no. At some point, when it gets that bad, you need to get in there. Like, that could be clothes everywhere, food everywhere, plates, just growing mold and everything. So you literally need to get in there and get in the room and clean for the client's safety. So then you just tell the client, hey, I'm sorry, I have to get in there and clean the room and everything. So yeah. And I just had, again, have my issues with stuff like that. I mean, that's great. You want to like protect the client and everything, but some of the things the group home was kind of based on, I didn't really agree with. Like, they would have a motto or a slogan where, hey, the goal is, we want to get these clients to a certain level of confidence that they can actually go out and live on their own. That, again, that's a great goal. It's just highly unrealistic. Throughout my time there, and again, I knew it was only like 8 months, and not all group homes are like run the same way. But I've never met a client that 8 months that actually had the capabilities to move out, and have an apartment on their own, pay bills. They just did not have that kind of like ability to like do everyday life skills stuff like that. And part of the group home worker's job, like my slash mental health counselor's job, was to again help them with those independent living skills, teaching them coping skills, life skills, and how to clean, cook. And some of them did okay at that. Someone volunteered to help me cook, and again, they would get their points for incentives and whatnot. But they never really learned a lot of skills throughout my time there. Again, my lens, my time, my experience. I'm sure at group homes, like other group homes, they have different experiences and whatnot. But again, I think the motto at some of these places need to be changed, where it's just like, this is a group home, we're going to take care of you, and we don't really have any expectations for them. Just if they want to improve, they can, they have the ability, and we're going to help them through that process. But I just feel like it was really difficult for some of us workers to apply those skills because, one, we didn't have time. We really did not have a lot of time to teach them coping skills because we're too busy cooking for them, cleaning for them, having to drive them where they want to go. Now, medical appointments, I get, I understand that's very serious and it's important. And again, if we could call Medicare for them, we do that and everything. But if they wanted to go to like the grocery store or McDonald's or whatever, for the most part, we had to take them within reason. I mean, if you went on like 5 rides, whatever, in a row, it's perfectly fine to be like, hey, I need a break. But We just did not have the time to even teach them any type of skills. And I just think that's something that's really wrong with the system. And I just think there needs to be major improvements that in the system regarding group homes, you know. And in the grand scheme of things, I really didn't see these clients make any improvements. You know, they weren't getting therapeutic treatment from like therapists out there. Some of them met with independent living skills workers, some of them had case managers, but a lot of these clients had severe issues, you know, and a lot of them got like violent with one another and themselves, and it was just very dangerous for them, the workers. And again, it's not uncommon where you'd have to call the cops and, you know, to help settle the clients down, you know. But from like a mental health aspect, like many of these clients made zero improvements because they just didn't have any services like that for them. Very few saw a mental health therapist, and that was good and everything. But again, they're not required to have a therapist or anything like that, especially with the clients who have bipolar, mixed with PTSD or schizophrenia disorder. You know, like I've been a part of some really scary situations, and never, for the most part, got better. You know, because they weren't receiving services to improve their behaviors and their mental health. It just wasn't happening. You know, and again, it was more just like client-centered, person-centered, you know. If there are issues, you don't really change it to an extent, but you kind of work with the client to find out a certain way that works best for them and so forth. You know, they're devising their own plan. And there's some things with that modality that I like, and there's some things that I don't. And, you know, because I'm always going to be a fan of like the empathy aspect of therapy and helping, and not really taking the expert approach, but being on the same level. And again, that's what I do like about it. But, you know, especially as a group home worker, you know, it's just very frustrating where you see the clients making the same, I guess, mistakes or issues over and over again, and nothing's really being done to improve that behavior. You know, it's okay, there seems to be a problem. Now, how would you like to fix it? What ways do you think would benefit you? Now, again, it's just you're asking someone with severe mental health issues and also substance abuse issues, what would be the best plan for them? And they really don't think of anything that would be like an improvement, you know? So again, you're set up to make the same mistakes over and over again. And to make matters even worse, a lot of times you don't get support from management. I know that was just the case for me when I worked at that particular group home. And again, just nothing ever gets changed, and it can be very frustrating. So now I'm moving on to my next job, being an ARMS worker, which stands for Adult Rehabilitative Mental Health Service. And I guess if you're working with kids too, it's called something different. It's called Children Therapeutic Support and Services, which I also did at this particular company. And ARMS is okay, I guess, for me. It's more of, again, you're doing functional assessments to develop a good treatment plan for the client, and then you drive to the client's house or facility. And again, you get paid for your mileage, which is cool. And you teach them independent living skills, coping skills. You know, you really take that client-centered, strength-based approach to it. So, and it was okay, but to be honest with you, it wasn't really for me in the long run. And it, again, never was going to be for me. It was just like a job to get good experience, and I felt like I did. And it also brings up another really interesting point to how there may also be issues or more issues in the mental health field. And it could be more on like scope of practice. Because what I've really learned is that ARMS kind of gets into ILS, so ILS is an independent living skills worker, and vice versa. They, not saying their like entire scope of practice is similar, but it definitely gets into one another. And also, when I would have some clients who would be in the treatment center. So from my point of view, I was always taught that an arms worker cannot work with a client in residential treatment. I'm not really sure if that's changed, but it was just funny because I had this one client who was intensive outpatient with lodging and he's going to a treatment center. So I would wait for him to get back from the treatment center and again go over skills with him. Again, getting back into coping skills regarding like cravings, triggers, and so forth. And it's just, again, funny because he's pretty much learning the same thing I'm teaching him at the treatment center, being taught by like LADCs there. So overall, it was okay, but in the long run, not for me. But again, it brought up a really interesting point on how many of our jobs kind of go into like another job. Like sometimes case managers do things that arms workers do, or arms workers will help get resources for clients that are, again, are similar to a case manager. I mean, it's not uncommon for like big companies to have like multiple, like different types of jobs at their facilities. Like this one place, had arms workers, case managers, therapists, social workers, all working together. So just another interesting point to make. And then after that, I became an addiction counselor at an outpatient treatment center. And this was actually the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. So just like many other counselors, especially in outpatient setting, that I had many difficulties. I guess one of the biggest issues during this process is actually getting clients engaged in treatment due to their fears of actually going out in public or into the facility, putting themselves at risk of getting the virus. Which again, all of those worries are definitely valid. But at the same time, the treatment center is trying to run a business, and at the treatment center I was working at the time, we didn't actually go to the webcam sessions. We actually saw clients in person throughout the pandemic. So it was really nice to actually continue seeing clients in person. It really helped build that strong connection, and it was just overall just really nice. But again, at the same time, it was just really difficult getting them into treatment. Especially if some of them weren't even like sick. It was more just that fear, which is definitely understandable. But then you'd also have clients that would take advantage of the pandemic and just would not want to go to group. I mean, I can't tell you how many clients I had that would strongly protest not going to group due to the virus, and then when they would get to group and I would UA them, they would come up positive for all sorts of substances. So, not the overall best situation for both parties, but we eventually got through it through the best of our abilities, you could say. So, I also want to bring up one more difficult issue that I can imagine some outpatient facilities having, and one of them being rent for some clients. Now, some programs have this deal where if clients, let's say, live in a sober house and everything, and they, let's say, promise on the contract to go to five groups a week, and if they go to five groups a week, the treatment center will actually pay their rent, which overall is a great deal for both parties. Now, again, the COVID situation happened, and you would have some of these clients, again, not wanting to go to group, so they miss their sessions, and then nobody gets paid. Like, there was, like, a lot of issues when it comes to, like, sending checks to sober house when it comes to rent and everything, because, again, clients were coming to group. So, not trying to make excuses, but I feel like a lot of the times the counselors, especially me, in those situations were kind of the scapegoat for all those issues because counselors would again get in trouble because their clients were not coming to group, even though they said they were sick or worried and everything. But at the same time, their lack of attendance would go against the contract they signed for getting the rent paid. So, there were issues with, like, the owners, the counselors, the sober house managers who would expect their rent to get paid by the treatment center. So, It was a really messy situation, but overall we got through it. And again, I would also love to hear from all the counselors out there that went through any similar type of issues during the pandemic. I would love to hear your take on it and how you got through issues and how you overcame them. That'd just be awesome. So yeah, please leave a comment down below my link. And yeah, we can go over some of these issues. I would love to hear from all of you, even probation officers, case managers, anyone that struggled with their clients during this pandemic. Well, that about does it for my first introduction episode. I just, again, want to thank everyone for listening. This is an awesome, great experience. And I, again, hope to have many more down the road. So, thank you all. And just remember, everything that is said in my podcast or any type of advice that is given is not meant to be taken as any type of therapy. If you find yourself having any type of mental or emotional issues, please seek the care of a medical professional or licensed therapist.